Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hamid, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum. Greetings to our audience. Sister Cheryl, are you on the line? Okay,
Good morning.
All right. Peace and blessings, Brother Fleming here, Elamain.
Welcome, Brother Fleming, Elamain. Good to have you. This is Amatullah Alaji Kabri. Cheryl is en route out of town, so he'll be in the blue sky shortly, inshallah. We pray Allah bless you with a safe trip. And we want to extend the greetings of Eid Mubarak to all of the Muslims who have been celebrating the Eid. There are a few who might be in the Southeast region still enjoying that third and final day of the Eid. And we want to welcome our listening audience, those who join us each Monday here on AM360 at 10 a.m. Pacific time and 1 p.m. Eastern time. Fleming Elamain, Cheryl Sutter, and myself, Amatullah Alaji Sabri. We kind of have this collaborative thing going where we co-host this program, which is a collaboration of the American Coalition for Good Government and like-minded people for social justice and the recognition of one humanity. And in the main, our discussions will be centered on our obligation as Muslims to transform our faith into action through proactive civic engagement, as we examine our roles as Muslims in establishing a more just society. And in order to do that, to kind of prompt our audience and ourselves to that proactive civic engagement, we ask a series of questions to prompt our minds and thoughts to delve into the principles and issues of civic engagement. For an example, how do we inform, educate, and engage our communities on a sustainable level? How do we train and support future leaders? That's very important. As we saw the role of the two Justins down in Tennessee, young men in their late 20s taking on leadership responsibility. How do we get elected or appointed to boards and commissions? How do we encourage and protect our leaders? We know that we have some leaders like Ilhan Omar and Taliba and Rashida Tlaib in the Congress who have received threats, and here in California, our state senator, who happens to be a Muslim, has received threats. So we need to think about how do we protect the leaders that we have elected. What does true accountability for these leaders, what does that look like? And how do we create, build, and sustain collaborative and mutually beneficial coalitions with like-minded individuals and organizations? This week we're going to be talking about community action and civilian responsibility or civic responsibility. But before we go into that, let's do our weekly roundup. Cheryl, do you have some thoughts for us on any incidents or happenings on the national or international scene that caught your attention this week?
Actually, yes, I wanted to get you guys' view on what's been happening in Antioch, here in Antioch, California, with the latest scandal, police scandal, and what's been happening with the texting scandal. Have you heard about it?
Yes, I have. In fact, on the eve, Friday, just a few sisters and I were discussing that. Why don't you inform our audience what's going on with that?
Well, you know, I'm in the airport, so I can only say a little bit. Just kind of laugh. But you want to give them a lowdown, Sister Amakula, about the texting scandal?
Well, what has happened, and we shouldn't be surprised, police officials and government officials, you know, it's come to light that they have been texting white supremacists thoughts and talking about threats to the mayor there, who happens to be African American, and so folks are pretending to be outraged and surprised. But I personally wasn't surprised when you look at what has been happening the last few years, especially where police officers have just outright killed civilians. So the fact that they're harboring those kinds of thoughts and plans doesn't come as a surprise to me. I don't know. And it's unfortunate because we should have more trust with law enforcement and the community. But unfortunately, this is not always the case. So that's what I would say on that. But it reminds me of the situation. You know, we've talked about these school shootings and whatnot. It reminds me of a situation, and I wanted to bring this to last week. I didn't have an opportunity to give a shout out to the brothers and sisters in New York at Masjid Malcolm Shabazz on April 14, 1972. There was actually an attack by the police on Temple No. 7 at that time, and which is located at 116th Street on the corner there at Lenox Avenue. On the second floor of that building, the first floor was commercial, the second floor was the school, and the top floor, the third floor, was where the meeting hall was for the meetings. At that time, it was the Nation of Islam. This is in Harlem, New York. And so on April 14, 1972, under a false pretense that someone had run into the building that had a gun, which isn't likely because at that time the brothers would stand on the door. The doors were locked, and so no one can just run into the building. So police officers, they came into the building, pulled guns, and met with resistance from some of the brothers. One brother who recently passed, Khalid Ali, who was Brother Lewis, he was the dean of students for the boys. And Brother Muhammad Sadiq, who was Clark X at that time, was the director of the school. And then there were other brothers down there at that front, that ground floor level. And so there was a scuffle. A police officer was killed with his own weapon. Our brothers were unarmed. And in the meantime, this happened at a strategic time for the police, but not for us, because it was right at 1 o'clock, between 11:30 and 12:30. What would happen was the buses would come bringing the female students, and they would be unloading, going up the back staircase, and the male students, they would come down the back staircase, which was right on Lenox. The entrance the police came on was on 116th Street. And so right in the middle of these students departing and coming into the building, the police attacked the building. So the dean, he was charged with the death of the policeman, and people would be surprised. There were celebrities that you would really know who came to the defense of our community at that time. And eventually the charges were dropped because, as I said, our brothers were not, they were not armed. The police were the ones who were armed and who came in. And so if anyone shot, it was a policeman who shot. But anyway, fast forward, we thank Allah that for, number one, the bravery of our brothers, because we don't know what the outcome would have been. But we thank Allah that because of the efforts of the Muslim leadership there in the New York, the Harlem area, Imam Bacha and the Imam in the Bronx particularly, there have been good relations that have been set up between the NYPD and the Muslim community, and there's not that level of hostility that existed back in the 60s and the 70s. And this is a result of, I cite this because it's a result of proactive initiatives on the part of Muslims in the association with the leadership of Imam Muhammad and the city and police officials, that now there is a respectful relationship between the Muslim community and law enforcement. And this is what we want to replicate across the country, you know, inshallah. But I'm talking too much, brother.
Well, since we're traveling down the road, let me give a 30-second response just to enlighten our audience on what has happened somewhat historically. One incident that's very rarely spoken of is when some sisters were traveling by way of train from the Detroit area. I forget, they may have been going to Chicago, and they were assaulted, or they were, someone attempted to assault them on a train, and they fought diligently and defended themselves, went to court, and the case was dropped. It magnifies, again, the kind of respect that the Islamic community had, even with the court system at that time. Now, unfortunately, in California, the brother was killed out there when there was an assault by the police authorities. and that caused a lot of rift in the community. People from New York wanted to come in and, as they say, take care of business, but the leadership at that time said, no, we're not going to respond that way. And so all this sort of indicates a need, you know, going forward, maintain relationships with people, know who your designated political representative is supposed to be, have some kind of ongoing relationship with the authorities in your community, and that will, you know, work to our advantage going forward. It's also a demonstration of how important it is, so critically important, to have an organized community effort in doing outreach work in the broader community. And I don't want to take up all the time on that theme because we have some, you know, very informed guests today. We want to give them a chance to share. I'll take 30 more seconds just to talk about what happens over here on the East Coast, since we just got a report on the West Coast. And for those that are listening, this program comes from both.
Before you do that, brother, can I just say one thing about the,
sure,
the police
please.
Scandal, just really quickly?
You're in the airport. Go right ahead.
Well, it's quiet. I just want to say it really quick. What they found was 40% of the officers in Antioch, and there were three officers from Pittsburgh out in East Contra Costa County. What they found was the FBI has been investigating this for over 2 years, and though it's not surprising to the black and brown communities, it was the blatancy of the disregard that was in these text messages, the Facebook posts, and it was racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic in nature, some of the comments that they were making. And some of them resigned, some of them were fired, and some were put on leave. But now we are calling as a community, not only that they were fired and put on leave, but now we need to go back and look at some of the cases. Specifically of the people who were mentioned in the text, it reminds us of what happened with the Oakland Raiders and then the Richmond cops who were caught up in this years ago. But this is a perpetual cycle. So we are not actively doing something to make sure that the police, that these officers are not held accountable, then we are going to be in this cyclical process where we are not holding people accountable, and where we are not only bringing harm, but people have died because of these officers' behavior. And it's not just officers. There was also an internal affairs person who was caught up in this. So the police are policing the police in their own bad behavior. Now, I'm not one who says that all police are bad, but we can't talk about bad and good police, because if the apple is if the fruit is bad, the tree is rotten. So this is what we have to look at. You got to chop down the whole tree.
Two other things I would suggest we're also doing the process. And I'll give an example. And Winston-Salem, we have an African-American police chief, and the sheriff is also, the whole sheriff's department is also African-American. Now, that should make a big difference in their outreach in the community. Sometimes it happens that way, sometimes it doesn't. But we have at least got to put forth the effort to maintain some kind of relationship to hold them accountable. We have to hold them accountable. It's not going to happen in a vacuum. And then we have to do our part also to be active, participatory citizens. We don't let up. We hold them accountable. We also build relationships as we go along the route. And I'll end with this. Many of us in our community have gone through the FBI training as citizens. And they have the Citizen Academy for those who have the kind of interest. And we were encouraged to do that. So we have a going relationship with them. And I'll give you one final example. When we had a threat in Winston-Salem from some of these outlandish people wanting to assault the masjids, the FBI came to the masjids to see what we needed to do to set up security, to counter the kind of foolishness. So it does make a difference, brothers and sisters. Your relationship make a difference. Hold them accountable, and then hold yourself accountable for being proactive in these kind of cases. Now, we don't want to take any more time on that. I'm going to have to take out my sword, out of my sheath, and honor our guests that have come online to participate with us. So I'm going to end our current event. I'll come back and talk more specifically about the conference I went into this weekend in Washington, D.C., entitled Summit for Religious Freedoms, One Nation, All Faiths. But right now, with your permission, we're going to go ahead and bring some of our guests on. We should have Veronica Bidding online. We should have Irvin Shakir and Adam Bia. And we're going to bring Sister Veronica Bidding on first, and she knows a lot about community organizing, how citizens should be participating in a democracy based on participation. Too many of us critique. Very few of us participate. I'm going to say that again. too many of us critique and very few of us participate, and that makes a big difference in the quality of life you have in your community. You got to be involved. You got to be engaged, and then you get off your bottom and do something about it. I'm putting it very gently. But with that said, Sister Veronica Betty, she has been a whirlwind when it comes to environmental justice issues and racism issues. She's traveled as far east as Egypt to participate in conferences. She's going to be traveling again very soon, presenting information on what we can do to counter this environmental racism in our community. So anything, Sister Veronica, you want to start off with, the floor is yours. Welcome to MAP 5, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk even further about what you're doing in the community. So if you would, take a few moments and introduce yourself, Veronica, to the community at large, and we'll have Q&A later on.
Okay. Thank you very much, brother. Brother Fleming Elamine, one of my heroes, my son's mentor. But I'm extremely excited to be here with you today. I am speaking to you from my office in Raleigh, North Carolina, where I serve as the Director of Development and Communications with a black-owned, operated over 32 years, healthcare nonprofit corporation, and there's also a for-profit side. But we specialize in helping our people to live healthier lives and to get the services that we need, whether it's emotional, behavioral, mental, physical health needs. So we're a holistic health organization, and we're the only certified healthcare organization that can provide respite for the loved ones of persons who are caretakers, you know, persons who are in need of a break because their loved one have some disabilities that they're unable to actually live on their own. So we do that from one day to 14 days, and we're the only certified organization that does that. On the other hand, of course, I'm Veronica. I'm the mother of a son and a daughter and one grandson, and a graduate, a proud alumna of Winston-Salem State University in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where my friend, Brother Fleming Elamine, resides. I'm here today, though, to talk to you about the importance and the gratitude of organizing and partnering with community and serving in community and the many, many, many blessings and that's provided as a result of doing that. The blessings of respecting every individual as an individual, as human, and, you know, of course, doing that, you have to appreciate the earth. This earth that God has given us to take care of, to ensure that our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren are left better than some of the experiences that we're having. With that, I will provide the definition of environmental justice as perceived or defined by the U.S., the United States Environmental Protection Agency. Environmental justice is the fair treatment and meaningful involvement of all people, regardless of race, color, national origin, or income, with respect to the development, implementation, and enforcement of environmental laws, regulations, and policies. Now, with that said, you all know, everyone in the listening audience knows that corporations are not people, okay, first and foremost. Too often, persons who are victimized by environmental injustices look like us. It's typically people of color. Whether by conscious design or institutional neglect, communities of color in urban ghettos, in rural poverty pockets, or in economically impoverished Native American reservations and other areas face some of the worst environmental devastation in this entire country. Nowhere else would you find a statistic that has been researched and proven that if you are born black or brown in America, the chances of you living within a 2-mile radius of a landfill or a toxic waste site, 90% of us who are black and brown in this America live within a 2-mile radius of a toxic waste site or a landfill. And you all know the result of landfills when trash and garbage and disposed waste sit anywhere too long, methane gas is produced.
Mm-hmm.
Treating the methane gas is something that very often does not happen when they're close to black and brown communities. So you all know the result, that many health disparities. People talk about social determinants of health. How can the determinants of your health and the quality of your health be great if you live near methane gas sites? Carcinogens, toxins. So what? As a result of that, you all know the history of environmental justice in America and how Warren County, Warrenton, North Carolina area, has been honored or recognized as the home or the start of the environmental justice movement. That happened because there were PCB-laced waste in North Carolina was dumped on the side of the road, picked up by a trucker whose company received millions of dollars to dispose of this waste. There were three proposed sites as to where this waste that was cancer-causing would go. Of course, all three locations were where predominantly black and brown people lived, played, worked, and went to school. So the chosen area was Warrenton, North Carolina, where about, at that time, almost 80% of the residents looked like me, brown skin. In order to prevent the dumping 40 years ago in 1982, men, mostly women actually, and children laid in the street to prevent the trucks from entering their neighborhoods. Of course, over the period of the protest, over 500 black and brown people were arrested and some died. And that's the part of the story that most people never hear, that five people actually were literally murdered trying to protect their children, their families, and their communities. Once these things are dumped, of course, it pollutes and contaminates the air, the water, and the soil. So growing your own vegetation, while it seems like a healthy option, if the water is tainted with carcinogens, what do you think you're going to produce? Contaminated vegetation. Well, that was happening, and the people fought and fought and fought. As recently as this past Thursday evening in Raleigh, North Carolina, at the North Carolina Museum of History, Brother Reverend Dr. Benjamin Chavis, the Honorable Eva Clayton, former District 1 Congresswoman, Mrs. Bernice Miller Travis, and a few others actually sat on a panel and spoke about that 40-plus year occurrence. Dolly Burwell is not always credited as she should be for the work that she did in organizing the people, getting them out. And most recently, in September of 2022, please tell me when I need to stop, but in 2022, in September, the commemoration of the 40-year anniversary of that occurrence that literally started the environmental justice movement, I met courageous women who were walking on walkers with assistance who laid in those streets. And it was the most powerful, moving interaction I ever had. I mean, the tears were flowing. These same women on walkers walked the 2 miles from the local church where they would gather and meet down to that former landfill that has since been closed, and they tell us it's been detoxified. But how do you detoxify waste that has contaminated your soil, your air, and your water? Now,
That question may be a good place to pause for a second. We have to run commercials, unfortunately, or PSAs. But
keep
that question in mind. How How do you really detoxify a landfill like that that has so much potential of long-term carcinogens in the water? In fact, it can soak down into the water supply if it's not done correctly. We have to do a PSA every now and then. In the well water.
Okay.
And that's not far from Soul City, I don't believe. Is it, Veronica? Is that
close,
like,
the county where Soul City is,
okay,
in the heart of Warren County. Okay,
we're going to pick it up right there at Soul City after we run this PSA. So, Samantha, are you ready for that?
Ready for the PSA. Here we go.
Okay.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to AM 360. Join your host, Manira Habil, every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we explore relationship topics addressing what we didn't know, what we've learned, and what we need to know and why. Because on this show, it's all about courtship and marriage.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Nirmat Shaheed, restorative justice practitioner for the Oakland Unified School District and host on AM 360's The Pearls of Women Quranic Mondays. We're asking you to help us make a difference in the life of a student. We need you to spread the word that CWSC is offering 5 college scholarships in the form of direct financial aid to students who qualify and are graduating from high school this year or current college students. Learn more and apply online today at cwsc.us. But hurry, the deadline for applications is June the 20th. Thank you for helping secure our next generation's intelligentsia. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brother Willis, for reminding us of that. And we encourage those who can to make a monthly donation of $9.99. Since we're back to having that cafe frappuccino and that chai latte, $9.99 doesn't seem like a big number, does it? But anyway, we want to go back to Soul City with Sister Veronica.
Yeah, Soul City. It sounds like nation time to me, but go ahead, Veronica. Tell us about Soul City and what happened in that community in Warren County, North Carolina.
Oh, yeah, in Warren County, North Carolina, there's a gentleman that a lot of persons are very familiar with, and that city, Soul City, North Carolina, the land was becoming somewhat abandoned, and it's actually now considered a lost dream, but I don't consider it that. But Brother Floyd McKissick Sr., Floyd McKissick, saw so much potential in the area. He was a World War II veteran, and he had gone to law school at UNC Chapel Hill, and he had embraced the Black Power movement. That's how he's often described. But he founded this city, and he wanted this city to be Black-owned, Black-operated, Black landowners, of course, homeowners, Black operated schools, attorneys, business people, and business owners, of course. And it has not, since his transition, been exactly what his dream was, you know, for the city to be. But now, right now, there are efforts to revitalize the area. Actually, Mr. Jimmy Moore, an African-American engineer who was a North Carolina A&T State University graduate living in Greenville, South Carolina. He's a mathematical engineer, you know, he's very brilliant. He's seeking to build an international data center in Soul City. Warren County government provided him, I think it's about 36 acres of land, and I think he's going to do some great things. And he wants all of the partners to be HBCUs, or historically black colleges and universities. And actually, he wants to increase the earning potential of the people in that area, because right now they're considered, you know, pretty low wealth, struggling people, formerly farmers. And you all know what the environmental impacts, the negative environmental impacts. Farming isn't as prosperous of a career as it once was for black and brown people. But I do want to transition a little bit, if it's okay, to talk a little about solutions on that note. Is that
That's
okay?
That's fine, please. That's fine. We need solutions. By all means, in fact, I want to just make a reference to the listening audience. When Floyd McKissick started this effort, it was during the same time that a man by the name of Leroy Jones wrote a book called Nation Time. He's now known as Amir Baraka, and his son, of course, is the mayor now of New Jersey. But the thought pattern during that time was self-sufficiency, do for self, let's get on board and do something for the future generations from our own hands. And that theme was very prevalent in a lot of different organizations at the time, but Floyd tried to bring it into a reality in his efforts to create a Soul City specifically. And there have been some other efforts, but let's deal with some solutions, Veronica. Go right ahead, please.
Thank you. Thank you, brother. That was a great addition. Right now, well, we all know that our current president, Joseph Robinette Biden, has appointed Michael Regan as the United States Environmental Protection Agency administrator. He's a native of Goldsboro, North Carolina, and he's also a graduate of North Carolina A&T State University, Michael Regan. But he was also on the panel on Thursday evening. And that he's the first African-American, and I think they consider him the second non-white person to occupy that seat and that position. But in addition, there are great guys across this nation. Brother Dr. Mustafa Santiago Ali, who under the Obama administration was the U.S. EPA chairperson who was responsible for all environmental justice efforts, and he actually was really instrumental in coordinating the interagency working group who forced all agencies, whether it was HUD, Department of Transportation, all federal agencies to be attentive to environmental injustices and environmental racism. And you all know Brother Ben Chavis coined the term environmental racism after being arrested in Warren County while protesting against the humiliation and toxic poisoning of folks. Reverend Lennox Yearwood, the Hip Hop Caucus, he's doing some great work. And Reverend Dr. Gerald Durley, who my brother Reverend Fleming Elamine met at Emmanuel Baptist Church in Winston-Salem in August of 2019, they are some great, amongst others, movers and shakers who are educating our communities, preaching it from the pulpits, from every faith platform available. And while I served as a delegate with the United Nations COP27 conference in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt. It's about an hour flight from Cairo. I was there in November for a two-week period. There were countries represented from every country in the world, of course, through the United Nations was represented. And they were talking about what they were doing to reverse the deterioration of the earth. I met a 12-year-old girl named Sharon Ringel, 12 years old, a native born and bred, still living, of course, at 12, in Tanzania. Her father is a staunch supporter and advocate for environmental justice and against environmental racism all over the world. This 12-year-old girl had written a book, started a foundation, and had planted over 25,000 trees in the country of Tanzania. I was so intrigued by her story. I had visited every country I thought. I may have missed a few, of the African diaspora, and ran into this little 12-year-old girl who immediately took to me and I took to her. So I told her that I was going over back over to our area in the pavilion, in the environmental justice pavilion, and that former U.S. Vice President Al Gore would be speaking. And her father asked if they could go with me, and I said, of course, and asked if I would introduce her to Al Gore. I was like, I said, yes, of course I did. And guess what happened? I approached one of his Secret Service persons and said, I have this 12-year-old girl who's with me here. She and her father, and she wants to meet Al Gore and sign one of, autograph one of her books and provide, you know, provide it as a gift to him. He said, yes. So later they came out to get me, and we went to the back so that she could sign the book. So I basically took pictures, and I'm still in contact with Sharon Ringel and her father, and we're trying to work on some international engagement and involvement to involve our youth in environmental justice here, because most of our people don't even know what environmental justice is, even though we are primarily negatively impacted by the offenses of environmental racism. So with that said, solutions would include international relationships, building those relationships, learning. I mean, I met young people from Sierra Leone and other countries in Western Africa who are doing marvelous things that we will never hear about. Zimbabwe, what's happening in Southeastern Africa on the continent of Africa is unbelievable. They are doing things, and to me, you know, this is my personal opinion and nothing documented or researched. They are far ahead of what we're doing with our younger people of high school and younger age here in America, to be totally transparent. Mm-hmm. Their youth are doing so many awesome things. And when their definition of fair treatment as defined by the U.S. EPA far, to me, exceeds what we are doing, because they believe that no group of people to bear the disproportionate share of the negative environmental consequences resulting from industrial, governmental, and commercial operations or policies. The corporations make billions of dollars as a result of being placed close to where we live. The pollutants stay in our communities, and our kids are disproportionately ill and dying from respiratory diseases. So as a solution, I'm with Sharon Ringel. Let's teach our children to build trees, to know why we need to build trees, why pollination is important, why we need to be concerned. Not only, you know, I work with a lot of national and international organizations like Citizen Science Association, and of course I must shout out the National Black Environmental Justice Network housed in New Orleans, Louisiana, where Asae Davis is doing a phenomenal job. I must shout out the Deep South Center for Environmental Justice in New Orleans, and, of course, the Dr. Robert Bullard School of Environmental Justice and Climate Justice at Texas Southern University. They're doing awesome work, but they can't do it alone. It's going to take the education of our people and the embracing of environmental racism as something that we primarily need to address, because if our environment is dirty and not livable, guess what? We won't be livable. We won't be able to eat well, breathe well, and produce all that we're able to and capable of producing. So when I talk solutions, I talk starting with our children, educating our children, not just on the careers that are available in the area, but that because they deserve to make money doing the work. But we need to tell them why we need to do this, why we need to take control, tell our own story, talk about what's happening, because too often, and I'm going to say this because I want to and need to and hope I don't offend anybody, but too often professors, leadership at primarily white institutions come into our community, do the research, get tenure, more grant funding, some from our federal government where we also pay taxes, and other accolades, and our communities are left worse than they were found. We want our drinking water clean. We want our air quality to increase. And we want the quality of our soil to be great so that we can produce great fruit, great vegetables, great things of this earth that God has granted to us. So if I need to stop, please let me know.
You do a fantastic job. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I have a question, Veronica. Are you in, well? What is your reaction to President Biden's executive order that establishes the Environmental Justice Department?
Let me tell you, I'm going to be totally honest, and this is the opinion of Veronica Bidding. I'm a part of the Justice 40 movement, and the Justice 40 movement is something that Joe Biden did in January 2021, just after inauguration, where he established the executive order for the Justice 40 Initiative, a government-wide effort to target 40% of benefits of climate and clean infrastructure investments to disadvantaged communities. Now, I said this on Thursday night, and I've said it on every platform I've been on. As a matter of fact, May 2023, I will be in Phoenix, Arizona, speaking on a panel, and they've asked me to address this because I've spoken strongly everywhere I've gone. The problem is 40%, which actually is billions of dollars, are supposed to come to our communities, but our communities are not prepared to even apply for the money, receive it, and make the necessary changes because the process is so challenging and difficult that people on the front line, leaders in marginalized communities, some of them don't even have the skill to interpret these federal documents. And I've been fussing and fighting about that, and I'm one person. There are four or five people who can help, but some of the stuff is so challenging and difficult that I can't. An EPA fellow. I'm an EPA Environmental Justice Fellow, have been since 2016, working with Justice 40, and have been doing this work over 15 years. But some of the interpretations of the RFPs with the National Institute of Health, National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, with the Environmental Protection Agency, and so many others, we are not in a position to, we'll take our time, consume a lot of time and energy to apply, and may or may not be funded. So what happens is the money is spent, too often, the money is spent, and our communities are, again, left worse than they were before. And the persons who were able to matriculate through the processes and write the grants that are fundable, they pocket the money, you know, and I don't know what they do with it. I'm not going to say that 100% of the time the money isn't spent properly, but too often that happens. And I'm just saying that. That's my opinion.
Okay, I appreciate it. Do you see a way that a structure could be set up that we identify who can matriculate through this process that you, like you say, and then workshops or training be given to designated people in designated areas so that they can apply in a timely manner for these RFPs?
Now, yes, now. The proposal was that persons who serve on the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Committee the WHEJAC with President Biden. That includes Dr. Beverly Wright, Dr. Robert Bullard, and some other folks. Ms. Peggy Shepherd out of WEAC in Harlem, New York. But when I personally attempted to make the connection with the consultants that were hired, there were two, a white male and a white female out of Rhode Island who they contracted with, who told me that the organizations I was working with didn't qualify before they even accepted my information. So that's supposed to be in place. And now I didn't finish what I was saying about Justice 40, but the initiative itself is supposedly a critical part of the administration's whole of government approach. Now, you all know whole of government is supposed to be an inclusive, holistic, integrative process that address the advancing environmental inequity, the racial, the economic justice, and the needs of impacted communities or frontline communities or marginalized communities, you know, who are ridden with poverty, pollution, disinvestment, all kinds of inequities. If you name it, they're there. But I think you are absolutely correct. If we work to formulate and organize a well-oiled machine of leaders who really care about community, now that's the most important component, I think. We need leadership who really care about community and not recognition and not money and not, you know, we've got to care about our people. We've got to form that coalition, whoever it is, wherever it is, regardless as to how many miles apart we live. We've got to sit down and talk about how we can do it before, you know, we only have about 20 more months to do this. Those beans and dogs, you know, because we don't know what's going to happen on the federal government level, who's going to be elected. And unless we start at the grassroots level in every community to engage, educate our people and make sure they cast their votes, and we hold people's feet to the fire to make sure that what they've committed to doing, they actually do. Unless and until we start doing that, you know, that's a solution. That's a solution in itself. We've got to start in our own communities, but we need to do that, and we need to make sure that the right people are in the right places and can access the necessary information and resources and make that happen. Great point. I'm glad you asked that question.
Thank you.
Yeah, I want to add another example to support what Sister Veronica is saying. You know, any federal program needs to come along with an educational component. The most recent one was the ARPA funding program, and I was involved in trying to get those dollars out to the community. But unless you were set up properly and had the right infrastructure of accounting, et cetera, your nonprofit organization couldn't qualify for the funding. And what happened? Mm-hmm. All those organizations who had a relationship with the bank, they were already set up in an organized fashion to process the grant language. They applied for the funds, and if you look at where the dollars went, very few really went into the heart of our community, even though the purpose of it was just that. It was to go into marginalized communities. The same is also true for the infrastructure bill. If you look at how many African-American contractors, minority contractors, got actual jobs behind that, it's very minimal. It all goes back to what Veronica was saying earlier. Any federal allocation or appropriations has to come with an educational piece to adjust needs in our community and be held accountable for making sure those dollars flow. I work with a group called the Southern Economic Strategy Team. It's seven southern states, and we're doing something just like that to make sure that we don't lose dollars going forward. I do want to pause for Q&A because Veronica shared a lot of information with us. So, Thomas, do we have any hands raised to ask her questions at this point? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Fleming, but I'm not certain.
Fleming.
Oh, boy. I wonder what happened.
What did you say?
I can hear you.
I can still hear you.
We can still hear you. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Did we have any questions or hands raised, Sister Amos Allah, for Sister Veronica
yes,
at this point?
Yes.
Okay, let's go to the questions.
We have Brother Ishmael from Dallas. He has his hand up, and he can go ahead and ask your question or give you a comment, Brother Ishmael.
Yes, enjoying the conversation. Just wanted to make a comment. You said something about building trees. Is that what you said? A comment you had made?
Well, yes, sir. That was one example how we can engage our children, one of the solutions. And I use the example of Sharon Ringo in Tanzania.
Okay, yeah, that made me think about environmental justice and how just not even having trees is a part of environmental justice in certain areas because certain most of the wealthiest neighborhoods, they have 65% more tree canopy than the poor neighborhoods. And we know trees can, you know, that can change the temperature from 20 to 45 degrees, make it a lot cooler. And we know the mental and physical effects of not having trees as far as water pollution, air, you know, quality, it would improve everything. And I just wanted to add that because when you said that reminded me of there's a discrepancy even in trees, something as simple as that, or even having flowers and things in the neighborhood that makes a big difference. And thank you. I'm enjoying the program. Have a good one.
Thank you very much for your comment
and your question. And I'll underscore with what Brother Ishmael said. I think if you look throughout America with gentrification, one of the first signs you'll see that an area is being gentrified is that they start planting trees right along the thoroughfare. So I know this is true for the East Oakland area. We have Brother Adam Bayar has his hand up. Brother Adam, did you have a question or a comment?
He's one of my good ones.
I'm doing this as a caller, but just to make a comment on something. The sister, she made some excellent points, but in terms of the solution, I like to see the people that are fighting for opportunities for us as a community to first analyze where we are. I remember in Fayetteville, I was part of the Business and Professional League. And they were trying to pass a school bond, $86 million school bond. And so as an organization, we fought for some minority femicide, right? Mm-hmm. And we asked the superintendent about the minority femicide. Well, when the school bond passed, one of our members held a seminar or workshop to take on minority contractors to see how many women want to apply for some of the contracts. You know, only three contractors showed up. And the problem is, individually, there were none of the contractors that could qualify. Some of them couldn't get bonded. So we're fighting this stuff that we're not ready for, which is embarrassing when you go to the Caucasian and justify their hardline position. So my question, why can't our people that are fighting for this stuff at least first come and see what the state of the community is in terms of being able to do that? I know in North Carolina, I used to have a talk show locally, and I found out about the state had a 10% set aside mandate. And someone changed the bill from a mandated goal to an aspirational goal. I said, what the heck is an aspirational goal? You know? So I found out about three or four legislators that signed off on the bill. So I called them up. I said, why you do that, man? Oh, I didn't read the bill. You mean you signed this stuff and you ain't read it?
What?
You know. And the other student didn't return my calls. I guess that my reputation preceded me.
Mm-hmm.
So they really kicked this stuff under the bus. I'm an aspirational goal. All right. I see next time you run for office, we're going to aspire to send you back home. How about that?
That was a good thing. Now, you know, we're going to have to go to a break in just a moment, but I'd like to put some thought in to Brother Adam and Sister Veronica. Maybe the two of them can pair up since Brother Adam is into the accounting and the financial analysis and setup type of area or space. In trying to find a solution, perhaps we need to identify nonprofits that could apply for these fundings and bring in people like Brother Adam to make sure that they have the correct financial infrastructure that would make them eligible and qualified for these types of RFPs. And it's, you know, just from the outside. I know things are easier said than done. But I'm sure we have enough qualified professional accountants and financial people who could help nonprofits to be able to get those kinds of structures in place. Even if we had to do a cooperative thing that serviced four or five different nonprofits. But does that seem feasible, Brother Adam?
It's something that's going to have to be done regardless of what level it's done on. Just believe me when I say that I get calls all the time about people wanting to set up structures and things and prepare themselves. I get that all the time. I'm not, you know, my time is limited in terms of how much help I can do. But it's something that's going to have to be done. And others are able to do it without any problems, but just with us, there's so many things that you got to, hurdles you got to come across, and one thing is trust, another thing is who's going to get the credit, another thing is how much money we're going to get out of it. All these things, we got to go through all the garbage to get something done.
Yes. And let me ask 30 seconds to that, if I may, please, if I'm too long. You know, we set aside a policy. We set aside a policy as county commissioners to make sure that 80% of all offer funds went into what they call qualified census tracts. Do you hear me? Which meant those communities that were impacted negatively before COVID, during COVID, and after COVID. And it was not an easy policy decision to make. It was a 5-2 vote to get right down to the bottom line. But even with that, the people who came in to apply to do work in those marginalized issues or areas of the community oftentimes were not us. Now, so we've got to really organize this, as Brother Adam said, in terms of a structure. Now, there's another element, too. Some of us resist working with each other, work with a bona fide person who knows how to get these things done. So I had to force some of these smaller guys, go talk to so-and-so and so-and-so. She's been doing this with federal grants for a long time. She's willing to work with you. And I sort of had to, you know, force the issue. Some of them want to come in with a paper bag proposal, and that insults my intelligence. Don't come to me with that kind of foolishness. But let's move on, though, because I don't want to get into the soapbox opera. We got some distinguished guests like Imam Adam Biyar and Imam Irvin Shakir. They have a lot of experience. Let's get them to share some of their genes with us. Do we have to break again for a PSA?
I think this would be the time to go ahead and break, and we bring them
We'll
in.
Come back.
We'll come right back.
Families, community, city, state, country, and more. Everything starts with you, the individual, you. What is the character of you? Are you a book? Can you be read? Join us every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a wonderful hour of information being shared by you, with you, for you, the you in all of us. I am Martha Nyla Abdullah, and I am your host for Community Developmental Stages. Again, every Friday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., be there.
Assalamu alaikum. Join us each and every Sunday from 5 to 7 Eastern Standard Time and 4 to 6 Central Standard Time for the broadcast of the contemplations of Imam Waridduddin Muhammad, sharing his insights, his wisdom, and his knowledge here on America Muslim 360, utilize the books edited by Brother Morocco, Brother Ghani, and Brother Ronald B. Shaheed. So we look forward to your presence as we share the insight, the logic, and the thinking of our beloved Imam Waridduddin Muhammad here on America Muslim 360 on a myriad of subject matters. We look forward to your presence. Assalamu alaikum.
The peace be on you. Assalamu alaikum. My name is Omar Shakir, and I'm resident imam of Masjid Bilal Ibn Rabah in San Antonio, Texas. And I would like to invite you every first Sunday from 12 to 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time to join us for our class where we're dealing with the subject matter of the basics in LSLaw. We are excited about this program, even if we're new Muslims or Muslims that have been in the faith for many, many years. It is a wonderful opportunity to learn and understand this beautiful way of life. We also connected with various insights from the tafsir of Imam Waridduddin Muhammad radiallahu anhu, and we all explain its practical application. We look forward to being with you on every first Sunday of the month where we would deal with the basics of Islam. The peace be on you. Assalamu alaikum.
Okay, so we're back in the studio. We have Sister Veronica has given us a wonderful presentation in the area of environmental justice and anti-racism and so much more. And we have now Brother Imam Adam Baya, who is the founder of the
150 at 100
So Brother Adam,
explain that later.
Let's get that money at 150. What is it, and how can someone participate?
Yeah, I think that's a solution also. I'm going to interview for a moment. Brother Adam mentioned solution. Yes, that's a solution in itself. At 150, let's bring Imam Irvin on. Then we'll let Brother Adam talk more specifically about that. Imam Irvin Shakir.
I think Imam Irvin Shakir. I think his line dropped. I'm not seeing his number, so that's why I brought Brother Adam on. Then I'll go and try and reach Irvin. Okay.
Thank you very much. All right then. Properly introduce Adam Biyat to the group. Then for those people who don't know. Imam Adam Biyar has been in the community for a long time. He's a well-known accountant, financial advisor, wealth of knowledge in that regard, former employee for Procter for Alfred Price and Waterhouse, or one of those
Price
major accounting firms. In New York City for a while. He got his teeth on that, traveling around the world for expatriates, taking care of their financial needs, and has an outstanding organization currently in Fayetteville, North Carolina, called BR Accounting Firm. So he brings you a wealth of knowledge. But one of the most significant things he's done recently is start a fund source for the schools in the community. And he did his research and found out we had very few full-time schools. So he started an effort entitled 150, and it's been an ongoing effort, and I'll let him take it from there. Brother Adam?
Thank you very much, Brother Fleming, my good friend. And Fleming and I go way back, believe me. I can remember as a young man graduating from Winston-Salem State University. Go Rams. Another Ram on the line, too, right?
Yeah, I think you might have a few.
No, Winston says she went to Winston. Okay. Anyway, back in 1977, when I finished my curriculum, I got a job offer with Price Waterhouse New York office. And I left Winston-Salem and moved to New York. At that time, my mother lived in Long Island, New York. So, way out on Long Island. And I didn't know the difference. So I went and moved with her, and I had to commute from Long Island to New York City every day. So when I left her house, it was dark, and when I got back, it was dark. And I said, this is just too much. So a good friend of mine and his wife lived on Staten Island, and I reached out to Fleming, and I said, hey, man, can I bunk with you for about three months? And him and his wife were gracious enough to allow me to stay with them through tax season, and it made a difference. So I'm going to thank Freeman and Cassandra for doing that. They really helped me out back then.
Well,
anyway, to bring it current, after we located to Fayetteville, North Carolina in 1984 and joined up with a local community named Omar Basai, met with Omar Basai. And then I was here as an accountant or a controller for a local African-American-owned company, Shaw Food Services, owned by Larry Shaw and his wife. Larry became a Muslim. Well, he was a Muslim before then, but he really became a Muslim. And I was his controller. I did that for 3 years and then moved out on my own to establish to be out in the county in the tax service. So, but anyway, back in 2016. At that time, I had my program. I still have a program on AM360 on every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock called Money Sense. And one thing was frustrated me was people always said that the man Muhammad said education is the number one priority. I mean, that was like cliche. Some of you might have heard that on your own. Numbers, education, number one priority. But to show how cliche it has become, we moved from having many full-time schools around the country. Then in 2016, I found there were only 7 full-time schools left. And I said, we got to do something about this. If something's the number one priority in my household, it gets all my attention until we resolve it. Right? So I said, well, I tell you what. I'm going to donate $50 a month to each school. For me, to every school. Every month, I would go down the list of schools, and I would send them $50. I need 99 people to do what I'm doing. And that's where the name 100 at 50. That would be $5,000 a month. And what motivated me a lot is if there's 100 fervor, they would conquer 1,000, right? You see how powerful that 100 is. So we began, and on my first program I made the announcement, we got 13 people said they would do what I'm doing. And from then we went on and on, and probably right now we've probably got about 70 consistent people doing it. And we probably average about $3,500 to $4,000 a month. Some months more than that, some months less than that. But most of the people that are doing that were pioneers, right? And I would say in the last, how many years have I been? That's 6 years, right? In the last 6 years, we probably raised well in excess of $350,000 for education. And I tell the people, send the money directly to the schools. Don't send it to me. I said, don't send the money to any organization because they tend to get amnesia. Send the money directly to the schools, right? And people that began with me, they're still doing it every month. I mean, just like this past tax season, I forgot what day it was, and I just sent an announcement out what school was supporting every month. Everybody started calling me, texting me, what's your school? That lets me know that they're out there and still awake, and they're still supporting me. So I'm hoping that we can get up to 100 people at $50, $5,000 a month. So that means right now there are 6 full-time schools remaining. That twice a year, each school is going to get an injection of $5,000. That's $10,000 a year. Right? And then, so that's the genesis and the evolution of that idea, 100 at 50.
And I would encourage any of our listening audience, you know, if Allah moves you and you know you have the means, $50 a month won't really do a lot of damage to your budget. So join the effort, because education is indeed a priority. If we're going to be successful as an entity, we've got to have a source of educating our children, a weekend school or a full-time school. But put something forward and make a commitment, you know, to at least support this effort. It's the only national one that I'm aware of that's consistently raising money to support the school system. The only one. Now, there are some people doing individual efforts, but this in terms of a collective effort from, you know, as Brother Adam said, primarily pioneers, they've been consistent month after month after month. And it's only, you know, $50 contributions you're making to support children. That's our future, brothers and sisters. So please consider contacting Adam. Please give them your contact information, Adam, so they can know how to contact you if they want to become a part of this movement to provide a foundation for our children's futures.
Yeah, if you can, you can send them an email at adam@BR, that's my last name, BEYAH, then the word accounting.com.
For those that are hard of hearing, say it one more time, please, sir.
adam@BRaccounting.com.
And the BR is spelled BEYAH. I have a question
yes,
for
yes,
Adam,
ma'am.
Because I was going
yes,
back
ma'am.
And forth. So if I wanted to if I wanted to become a part of this movement, I would
yes.
my $100, and if I say the school in Tennessee, I'm going to support the school in Tennessee, I would send that $100
right.
directly to the school in Tennessee?
Well, actually, it's $50. But if you want to send
$100,
I'm not going to discourage you. It's $50.
Okay, so it's 100 people sending $50.
At $50.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100 people at $50. And you're not limited to just one school. You can send it. You can send $50 to as many schools. Because when you started, you said, if I heard you correctly, that you sent $50 to all of the 7 schools that were in operation
no.
at that time. Is that correct?
No. And the way it works is, like, this month right here, we're supporting April Claire Muhammad School, Masjid Al-Khalifa in Brooklyn. That's where the money is going to this month. So at the beginning of the month, you get an email from us saying, hey, the school we're supporting for the month of May will be Claire Muhammad School in Nashville. Everybody
gotcha.
Send your money to Nashville, preferably by the 15th of the month. And
okay.
then after Nashville, then it'll be another school. I think in Milwaukee, whatever. It rotates.
So you're rotating it through the country, through the schools in the country.
Through the list of schools, right. So that's what I said. Twice a year, a school is going to send get some donations, yeah.
Okay. Now, is there a hope? Say that I'm a mother in Oakland, California, and I want a full-time school in Oakland, and we might have a fundraiser for a school fund. Can I apply to the 100 at 50 to support that school fund so that instead of 6 schools, we'll eventually have 7 and then 10 and then 20? How does that work?
The way it works is once, if there's a new full-time school established, then they would join our list. Our list is only for brick-and-mortar full-time school.
Brick-and-mortar full-time
That's what it's
school.
For.
Okay.
Full-time school, right?
Okay.
We had something unique happen. Claire Muhammad School in Newark, they wanted a list, and Sister Marsha, there was an imam, I can't remember his name at the time, but they told me to take them off the list because they were no longer a full-time school. That was unique because they admitted it, and they fessed up. They could have coasted along for a few more months and did that. But that's not the type of people they are. I said, thank you a lot. Thank you very much. And I said, as soon as y'all open back up, please let me know. So we're not trying to be, we're trying to be a supplementary type to help believers that want to establish a full-time school. We want to be a help to them. But our obligation is for the brick-and-mortar children in the seat schools that don't have the funds they need to have. And we want to be able to supplement them. We're not trying to be the end-all for everybody. You know, somebody contacted me and said, wow, well, if you ask for $100 a month, you might get more money. I said, okay. And then I went to the next idea. You always okay. got time to want to take up your time on stuff. Oh man! But anyway,
so realistically, what do you think that $5,000 twice a year? What type of help is that for a full-time school?
Well, I'm hoping that that's money they need for it might be just to give an extra bonus for the teachers, you know, or buy the supplies mm-hmm. they need. But I wish you, ma'am, Yusuf Abdullah and his wife, Mahasin, from Paramount School in Nashville, we could be online and answer that. So they tell you all the time how much help that is, how much help it is, and how much they look forward to that, and how they love 150.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the ones that keep us going.
Alhamdulillah.
They know that we're doing the right thing.
And we had one school who just bought some computers. They needed some computers, and that was a tremendous asset to them to have in their hand, minus to buy. You know, I forgot how many computers they actually purchased, but the students needed computers, and this fund gave them the resources they need to do just that without going to the regular budget.
Yeah, that was during the COVID period where they did a hybrid online in school thing, and they wanted to give every student these something in the hands. It was like, it cost like $59 each.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that was in addition to what we did. So I just reached out to all the 150, hey, the school needs 20 of these, and the cost is $59.95 for the cost. And really, my great supporters in Winston-Salem, they came through like a champ. Really. And they put the money up to buy the tablets. And, look, there's things like that. If schools have those kind of needs, that we can go above and beyond to do that.
And so you say you're about at 70 plus odd supporters now. What do you think is needed to get you across the finish line with the 100 supporters?
I've been dealing with that for the last 6 years and some change. And if I could solve that problem, if I knew, okay. I mean, I've called people, and people call me. They want me to help. This organization want me to help them with their effort to raise money for education. And then they would disperse the money every 6 months. And I said, they must not know what I be saying about organizations like that. If you're gonna pay one out every 6 months, aren't you setting yourself up to get amnesia?
If you don't have a good record keeping system, I guess you are.
Well, we not it. You know.
Yes.
Like I'll be dealing with Muslim businesses, I said, I ask a question. Somebody come in today want me to help them in their business. I ask them a question. After I listen to them, I say, are you in business or are you in business?
There's a difference between business and business, huh?
There's a difference between business and business.
Yes, big
And I'm not trying to help you stay in business.
You know, on that note, is the man Irvin Shakir back on the line again, Susama Tula, at 722-449?
He isn't.
He didn't come back on.
No, he's en route to pick up his grandson. So the timing didn't work out the way he thought it was going to work. Yeah, so he might try and call in on his cell phone. If I see a 336 number come on the line, I will try and put him in, inshallah, God willing. But can we go to a quick, was Brother Adam complete with his presentation?
Well, I want him to share with us also his effort also dealing with the school board there in the Cumberland County, or specifically Fayetteville. He put forth an effort to counter what they were trying to do with getting rid of textbooks in the school system there, and was able to have some success with that effort. Another example of how you can organize the citizens and really make a difference on impacting the political process. So, Brother Adam, you mind making reference and just sharing with us what you did in that regard?
Yeah, just to get, I was selected the chairperson of the local African-American caucus to the Cumberland County Democratic Party. And that wasn't something I reached out for. I just attended a Zoom meeting because I'm trying to help some people out. And the guy that invited me back door and they nominated me for the post without me knowing he was going to do that. And then the people said, yeah, Brother Adam, he'll be good. He'll make a lot of white people mad. I don't know where I get that kind of... I don't know about making white people mad. I'm going to make a lot of Negroes mad now. So anyway, I became the chairperson. And somebody came to one of our meetings and presumed they logged in and said that they were trying to remove books from the Cumberland County school system libraries. Cumberland County school system is probably 51% African American. And when I was able to lift up the books they were removing, I mean, there were some requisite LGBT books on there and whatever. There were some books that had nothing to do with that. You know, dealing with our history. One was like the Arkansas School Desegregation, whatever. So anyway, so I said, well, I'll go to the school board meeting and see what's up. And, you know, our superintendent is a school in Latin America. But he was the one on the down low trying to get this stuff done and thought it would get in the pushback. So at the meeting, I listened, and then when we got to the point where they let public input, first two people that came up were Caucasian females. And they this lady blasted the school board for trying to do that. So then I came up and I said, well, and I talked about critical race theory and understanding that there's a big movement against those types of things. And then I made a statement that I used to own a bookstore. And if you want to hire something from an African American, it was said it, put it in the book, you'll never find it. What? I said, but I'm going to upgrade that statement, modernize that statement. If you want to hire someone from an African-American student, or any student for that matter, send them to Cumberland County School. You'll never find it. And I sat down, and everybody was cheering. I guess it made the superintendent look so bad that they went into closed session real quick. And they came out with some kind of statement. But the hands were exposed with that. So, but just being able to be there, speaking to the cause, right? Being able to make good points. And one thing I would, and I've been on, and like I said, been working with Fleming, and we always compare notes. But one thing I do, I should say, with any, if you're in any local area, the Muslims need to get there, get out and get their voices heard, their voices respected. And you'd be surprised at what kind of people that would champion you getting your words out there. You understand?
Yes, I'm
that,
really
that's
not.
The first,
that is so true.
If they know you, they can't treat you any kind of way.
Right.
Right.
And they can't speak
I
for
anybody.
You because you're there to speak for yourself.
Right. Well, yeah, definitely.
And
yeah.
So Imam Shakir has joined us. Sorry to cut you off, Brother and Imam Adam.
No problem.
Ask him to come in. Fleming, you can go with Imam Shakir.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm glad Imam Evan Shakir, our Emeritus Imam from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, the founder of Sister Claire Muhammad School, Director of Education, on the post for 30 years plus as the leader in many respects, and really to a great degree molded people on this airways right now, like an Adam Biya and a brother Fleming Elamine, who were very young people coming to the community back in the 70s. So I'm honored to have him as a guest. Brother Mom, any comments you'd like to make about the need for citizens to get involved in community organization? And just share some of your experiences with us in your own words. Imam Irvin Shakir, Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
Well, I'm not president resident imam in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. I'm more like a, well, Imam Muhammad said you never retire as an imam. As far as the community, basically just do what the imam said do. I'm listening to Imam Adam. I was listening to you all. I remember Imam Muhammad was in Atlanta, and he made a statement. He said that if all the Muslims would just build one big school, it would do wonders for our community. And we just have a problem getting things done, really. Let's be truthful. Our community is probably Imam Muhammad. As he said, they follow Imam Muhammad. We have a problem following Imam Muhammad, in my opinion. Anything else you all want to know?
Why do you think we have that problem? Why do you think we have that problem?
Well, I think it's a carryover. You know, I think one of the things that happened, we made a transition from the teaching of the unrealized Muhammad to pure al-Islam. And we all took on learning the Arabic language. But I think what we forgot, and we have a lot of brothers that knows that language now. They start giving their own interpretation. First of all, I very seldom hear any imam today use Imam Muhammad tafsir, the way he explains the thing. For instance, recently in a book that I was reading called Women Who Answer the Call, and it says the tafsir of Imam Muhammad. The hijab. Have any of y'all ever heard how Imam Muhammad explained what the hijab really is? Have it ever been really taught to the average sister in the message? And another book he wrote, we have to develop our own culture. What I get from most of the Muslims that follow Imam Muhammad today, some of them are trying to be Arabs. I'm not an Arab. And they say, well, if you speak Arabic, the prophet said, you an Arab. He did. But I don't speak Arabic every day. So I think the problem, as far as Irvin is concerned, is that we're not in line with Imam Muhammad's tafsir. And recently, I think the Imam put out a book, not Imam, Imam Ron Shaheed have a book out called Follow the Leader. Why was that necessary? That the book had to be printed to follow the leader. Are we not following the leader? I don't think so.
You know, I think sometimes, Imam, that because Imam Muhammad's, like if you look at his video, or if you were blessed to see him, you know, his live presentation, he does not try to put on a show, you know.
That's correct.
He was himself in the way he presented the message that he would have in that particular talk or whatever it is. And it was in a language that he was so skilled at presenting it, in a language that the PhD and the middle school dropout could get something from the talk, just like the Quran. I think that's the influence of his having studied the Quran so in depth and so thoroughly, so that I think sometimes, like you're saying, maybe people, they turn their nose up at that and don't realize the value in that, in his ability to reach people across all educational backgrounds. And usually the people who have higher knowledge have a greater appreciation sometimes of the Imam because they can see the truth in what he's saying.
And I would add to that, Sister Amatulla, that, you know, we have specific areas we can look at and evaluate. For example, in Mississippi, of all places, the New Medina community out there, they've done a fantastic job. Imam Muhammad bought some property out there. The community has evolved into an actual city almost. In fact, they contacted me about helping them get their charter. But they took literally what Imam Muhammad said, and they created a city called New Medina. That's evidence of someone really understanding what Imam Muhammad really presented to us. The brothers up in Washington, D.C., they're about to cut the ribbon on Clara. It's a huge complex for senior citizens designed by primarily Muslims and other African Americans. And it took them years to get it off the ground, but they finally have a ribbon cutting where they're materializing what Imam Muhammad said in a physical structure for the community. And the others, you know, the brother up in New York almost bought a whole town up there. Yeah, Imam Pasha, I mean, he's really stretched out in terms of, yes. So we have examples, you know, that we can pinpoint, but the average presentation of Imam Muhammad's teaching, you could say, should be a simplified presentation. He never got into a 30-minute discussion of a word in his presentations. His was always designed to make you feel like you could receive what he was saying, no matter what your experience might have been, and you could get some kind of understanding of your life and how to improve your life from what he was telling you. And he always added a little humor to what he was saying also to make you digest a little bit better. And, you know, right. that format, you know, I very clearly remember, because I was in Chicago when the leadership changed. I remember specifically how he used to tell us, listen, brothers and sisters, Allah has blessed us because of our sincerity. It's not all that you know and, you know, all that you can recite. You have a sincere heart, and Allah saw your sincerity, and he's bringing you into more light than you had up under my father. But you're supposed to take the light and do something for the community. Now, if you're not serving the community in some capacity to help people, you have to ask yourself the question, what are you really doing with the faith that Allah has blessed you with? And I think that is the criteria. And I'll end with this because I want to hear what Imam Reverend Shakir has to say, because this young man is going to turn 85 years old next month, inshallah. So he has a lot of wisdom to share from his own experience in working with Imam Muhammad, being in the home of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Just basic experience we should not let go, with the brothers in our reach, we take advantage of, in other words. But I think when we listen to Kubas, that the first 15 minutes can elevate Allah and his grace to all of us. But the second part of it should be solutions for community concerns. It should apply to community issues that you need to do some work on to try to address. But if you keep that balance, you have a more productive group of Muslims in that specific community. But Brother Imam, would you mind sharing with the community at this point what your experience has been when the Imam Muhammad came to Winston-Salem and what insights he may have given you, or books, or any kind of experience you want to share with them, and also make a comment or two about your experience going to Chicago with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, if you don't mind, sir.
Well, I've been a follower of Islam. Didn't care of Islam at the age of 18. And today, not today, but I am 85 in a month. I've had the privilege of knowing Malcolm, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Imam Muhammad, Muhammad Ali, Dr. Shabazz, ma'am. In other words, Minister Farrakhan. I remember Minister Farrakhan when he was a student at Winston-Salem State. And I also remember him when he was riding around in a Chevrolet.
That was a long time ago.
Yes, Louis Eugene Walcott. Louis Eugene Walcott playing the violin at Winston-Salem State University.
That's right.
I remember.
That's right. Isaiah Kareem, one of the early pioneers who started Islam in North Carolina. But I think during the transition, one of the things Imam Muhammad said that I don't hear none of the imams saying, and maybe especially the old one. We was in a meeting in Chicago. He said, "Brothers, I want you to understand that we are a minority within a minority." He said, "What we want to try to do is to have influence with the people of America." He said, "We want the same kind of influence that the Jewish community has. That's all we're trying to achieve, and we have to do that by practicing his tafsir. You're not going to get it any other way. It's just not going to be done."
Right.
We're going to have to get it to study exactly his direction. And I asked a simple question. How many of you read these books that put out by Imam Ronald Shaheed?
I have.
I've read some. I haven't read.
Well, everybody should get those books. If you believe that the Imam Ronald Shaheed, put in print correctly everything that those books say that came from Imam Muhammad, you will be surprised what's in those books. For instance, the Imam said we have to build our own culture. What is that? What is the community that follow him? What is our culture? We even talk about we build our own culture. Is that really discussed?
That's a good question.
Well, I'm just telling you what the Imam said. He said this back in 77, 78, 79. He had the ministers. We were ministers at that time. We graduated from ministers to Imam. But he would call us into Chicago and give us lectures. And these are things One thing the ma'am said, what I heard him say, he put it this way, and this was right before he passed, he said, reread everything I ever taught. And you know why we do? Because we haven't got, we don't understand everything he taught. Go back and get the, yeah, get the book, The Women Who Answered the Call. And in that book, he said, he described what culture is. He said, culture is more than music and making pies. So what is the Muslim culture that we're trying to establish? And that's another thing, too, I think our community has to understand. We're not to duplicate everything that's coming out of Saudi Arabia.
No.
I don't know how did they get involved in it? I never read anything where Imam Muhammad said we go. In fact, I tell you what I have heard him say. He said there is not one Muslim country that exemplify al-Islam the way it is supposed to be or lived. Not one. Not one. Well, if that be true, do you all know who we're trying to establish? Not in our lifetime. This is going to take some time. But you need to understand what we're trying to do. I say to every Muslim, and I'm through with this thing, brother, that I got this boy in this car.
We appreciate doing
that. The community have got to get into Imam Muhammad's tafsir. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, thank you, Masalam. He gave us quite a bit to chew on here. Yes, thank you so much, Brother Imam. So I'm going to let you go first because I have to get on my soapbox off for a minute here. So I'm going to let you have your comments first.
I will bear witness to what the Imam said. In the last few months, I've been reading the Imam, Islam and Democracy, which I would highly recommend to folks to really take their time to read. And the latest one I've been looking at is Reading is Fundamental,
yes.
Which on many different levels, you know, it struck me of many different messages just from that title. You know, we take for granted Ikra Bismi Rabbika Alladhi Khalaq, you know, the first revelation being read or proclaim in the name of your Lord who creates. But then when I looked at the Imam choosing that title, Reading is Fundamental, which is a survey of his review of certain, different books. And so it gives you a good outlook. And in that, going back to what the Imam said in terms of the Arabic, I'm pretty sure it was in that publication where he was talking about his study of the Arabic language, and he was saying that that he amazed Darnell Kareem on how much he knew of the Arabic language because they didn't get all that the Imam knew when they were in the Muhammad University of Islam and the tutors that his father, young Elijah Muhammad, had for them, Jamil Diab and, you know, and others. But so he was, like, encouraging us to, you know, delve into the language ourselves, you know, and to be serious about really reflecting on the Quran, what Allah, the message that Allah gives us in the Quran that is in the Arabic language, and don't rely just on one translation, you know, maybe use referred to different translations, until you're able to, as the brother was saying, look at the language for yourself. For me, I know when the imam was using the started using the term when we say Rabbil Alameen, Lord of all the worlds, and then the imam gave us in his tafsir all the systems of knowledge, you know. And you hear imam say that all the time. Sometimes in my mind I would think, does he even know what that means, and has he explained to us what that means? And so I think I thank Imam Shafir for that reminder that we really have to delve into the gift that Allah has given us, and really appreciate and be grateful. You know, if you're ungrateful for the blessings that Allah has given you, then that might prove you unworthy of receiving any more blessings. And my last thing before I get off the soapbox, just to remind people that this past week, the big lawsuit of Dominion voting machines against Fox News, and how Dominion settled that lawsuit for $787 million. That could really help fund education, right? $787 million in that defamation suit that Fox News knew that they were going to lose because of all of the information. And I was surprised that all of the information Dominion was able to get through the discovery period, even before they got to trial. The judge gave a summary judgment that essentially gave Dominion the victory, and they were going to go to trial just to say, okay, how much of this $1.2 billion they're trying to get from you are you going to have to give up? But that's one big thing. But Tucker Carlson, that came on just before we came on the air, Iman Alameen, or Brother Fleming Alameen, Tucker Carlson and Fox News have parted ways. Last Friday was his last broadcast, and so his comments and texts about Trump were very explosive and a big part of this settlement. And Fox News is going to be facing, the Fox Corporation is going to be facing another lawsuit coming up shortly. And then also what flashed on the news was that Don Lemon was fired. So there's a lot of shakeup going on in the so-called media landscape. And that's all I have to say. Tune into Map 5, where your intellect is respected and your voice is perfected.
Yeah, alhamdulillah. Listen, let me say something very quickly. First, to thank all of our guests, our distinguished guests, Veronica Bidding for your contribution, Imam Adam Biyar for your insightfulness, Imam Muhammad for his sincere passion, appreciation of the work of Imam Waqif Muhammad and the work that he has done, because he's really an icon of what Islam really represents in many respects. I want to leave us with a few things very quickly. All of us were impacted by Imam Muhammad in different ways. It all depends on what you were able to receive from him. But I specifically remember him telling us that he had given us enough to last 1,000 years. Yeah. Now, you can take that any kind of way you want to take it, but the way I interpreted that, I've sort of made it a personal mission to put in the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., every copy of Imam Muhammad's books and the books written by Rana Shahid, and we talked about how we can go about doing that. But we got to preserve this going forward in the best capacity possible. And any imam who stands on that roster any Friday and give a khutbah and does not mention Imam Muhammad's name, to me, is questionable. Not only mention his name, but also make reference to his books and include that as a part of your delivery. Those of us that have been around for a while, you remember when every minister in the Nation of Islam, every Friday when they stood up, they read something from Muhammad Speaks, exactly what Elijah Muhammad said, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. That's what helped promote the paper. Let me say it again. That's what helped promote this paper, along with those lieutenants telling you pick up your papers before you leave. But it was elevated. It was elevated of importance. How many moms elevate Muslim Journal like that? Now, I know we have issues, but still it's our only communication vehicle we have. If we don't elevate the paper, what will happen to it? And finally, you know, we all have been blessed beyond imagination to have experienced the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's insight to make us independent thinkers, to free us from being parrots of another man's culture and ideology, to make us think for ourselves for the first time for many of us in our lives, to really reflect on that. And then the double blessing of his son to come into the leadership and give us clarity on what his father taught and to explain to us what our next experience should really be like and put us on a whole different dimension. But it should include a foundation of building community. You know, what good is explaining the sky if you have nothing on the ground? And finally, I said I'd refer back to the summit that I attended over the weekend in Washington, D.C. It was the Summit for Religious Freedom. And, you know, when I go to those events, you know, I'm a part of the Interfaith National Board. I always go with a book with the man Muhammad. Now, you had every state represented there, and some countries outside the states. And it was an event sponsored by the American United for the Separation of Church and State. That's the parent umbrella. But this is the first time they had a summit for religious freedom. It was a marvelous experience. You had every faith you can imagine under one umbrella. And what I really was impressed with, 50% of participants were young people. Let me say that again. 50% of the participants were young people. Now, how many young people do we have in our messages and centers that we can look at every Friday and come close to a number like that? So we've got to somehow engage our young people. I left them with a few quotes about, you know, from the Quran, of course, but I told them that Imam Muhammad said a few times that how can you believe in a God you can't see and not willing to help your neighbor? So just to bring things down to the bottom line, we have to help each other, grow with each other, be a humanitarian in your heart, be sincere in your effort to help other people. And as the man Muhammad told us many times, your humanity has to be broad enough to include all people in it. If you don't, then you're really sort of saying you've been ungrateful for the life Allah has given you. And that is a blessing. That is a blessing. So use your blessing. Be appreciative. Help someone else besides yourself. Help someone else besides yourself, and Allah will bless you accordingly for your effort. Any closing comments from Veronica or Adam, if you like to say? I thought your man Irvin had a grandson he had to deal with. We'll give you 30 seconds to make any final comments.
Well, I would quickly thank you. I would like to thank you all for the time, the attention, and Veronica Bidding. Just want to leave you with one comment. Make sure that all of your efforts, whether it's in environmental justice, community organization and development, be justice-driven, community-powered, and that you are accountable to making the change that is needed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Veronica. Brother Adam?
As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam.
Yeah, I didn't know if one thing I wanted to, something you mentioned about young people. We had to find out what virus has entered into our community. And I'm giving an example of something the sister said at my masjid innocently. But when she mentioned Imam Muhammad, she said, but he's no longer with us. And so, him, you know what I mean. So and no one said anything.
Yeah.
I couldn't, I'm just living on. And we got to clean up that kind of language because the youth have been infected, don't realize it. One brother, I was trying to get his grandson to come out and help me. He said, what's in it for me? I said, he's not the one we're looking for. Let's go to the next one.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
So we have to clean up those misconceptions. So they just didn't all stop coming around for no reason.
Right.
So that's it.
Well, that sounds like
on
the topic for another broadcast. Well, thank you, Brother Adam, for coming on. And inshallah, we want to remind people that we're here every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard and 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And we greet you with the greetings of peace. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam.